This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
Eamon Waddington is a bow hunter out of Australia. We've been trying to connect for quite some time now and finally got him on the horn to do a podcast. Eamon is a passionate bow hunter in Australia and has started an organization, a company, an opportunity. Let's call it an opportunity for people to learn how to hunt. He just started getting people interested in coming with him, learning how to bow hunt, learning how to hunt, learning how to butcher, learning how to cook. And he's like, man, why not just put something together in which we can host people and allow them to become hunters? And that's what broadside hunting is. Eamon's a great mate, great guy, passionate about hunting, and even more passionate about getting people into hunting and allowing them to stay there by equipping them with the skills they need to do it. As usual, if you love the podcast, share it. If you love the podcast, leave us a review. If you love the podcast, leave us a rating. We certainly have some amazing guests coming, and we'd love for you to subscribe also so that you are regularly getting your Blood Origins episodes, whether it's on Spotify or Apple. So enjoy.
So there's a reason why I started Blood Origins. And that reason is simple. Is that I wanted to convey the truth about hunting.
It brings awareness to non-hunters that it's more than just killing animals.
How do I start it?
Brittany.
My name.
Does my hair look okay?
It's fantastic.
My name is Mike Axelrod.
Start again.
Yeah, I hated it too.
Braxton, you said something in the car to me. You said that you were living on borrowed time.
There's a perception around who hunters are, what we're supposed to be, and a feminist that works for a non-profit that is a hunter that has only eaten wild game for the last 20 years is likely not the thing that people think about when it comes to a hunter.
You got the vid?
Yeah, I got it.
You got the vid?
Yeah, I got it. Spicy flu. Yeah, I got it. I got it last week, and it just... I've had it now twice, but the first time I kind of was here for about 3 or 4 days and I was fine. But yeah, this one being, it's fine. Like, I feel okay in my head. It's just my throat and stuff still pretty croaky and things.
Was it like razor blades in your throat?
Yeah, definitely. And I live in Brisbane, so it's super, like, it's subtropical here. So the fevers were just exacerbated majorly because it was already like 36 degrees Celsius here with like 100% humidity, so it didn't make it much fun.
Oh, so you had fevers as well with it?
Yeah, but yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, I got sick before the show season, and it was like razor blades in my throat, and I was like, oh my God, and went and I tested negative for everything.
Yeah.
But luckily, again, I got sick before show season.
Yeah.
So now we're halfway through show season, nearly 3/4 of the way through show season, and I haven't been sick yet, so touch wood. that. How's it all been? I haven't.
You go to the Sheep show, the one that was just on?
I did, yeah. Yeah. I went to Sheep. I went to Nashville. Sorry, not Nashville. I'm going to Nashville tomorrow. Nashville's on my brain.
Yep.
SCI tomorrow, but Sheep Show, yep, in Reno, Dallas Safari Club. Went to a little show in San Antonio, SCI this week, and then the final show is February 14th in Salt Lake City, Utah.
That SHOT Show?
We're done. No, SHOT Show happened last week. I took SHOT Show off.
Yeah.
I just needed to see my family.
Yeah.
I needed a couple of days in the office.
Yeah. I'm here.
So, but no, everything's good. As I just before we got on here, I told you the good news, and I don't know when this podcast will drop, so I cannot tell everybody the good news, but
sweet.
I'm super chuffed. I got off a phone call, and somebody that I was on the phone call with was like, man, you've got a big shit-eating grin on your face. And I was like, yep. Yep. Because I were about to do something that I've been wanting to do for a long, long, long time.
Definitely.
And make a big splash. You know, we promise that you're going to see action from us.
Yeah.
And you see it all the time. But this is the next level.
Yeah. No, you're doing great. I mean, I think everyone's pretty thankful for all the hard work you put into it. So well done.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. Well, Eamon Waddington, welcome to the Blood Origins podcast, finally.
Thanks, Robbie.
Shit, we've been trying to do this for forever. And then I came across the email. I was like, oh, I forgot to get back to Eamon.
Totally fine, man.
So introduce yourself. Introduce where you are in this world to the audience.
Yeah, no worries. So yeah, my name's Eamon Waddington. I live on the east coast of Australia in a city called Brisbane at the moment. Yeah, grew up in northeast Victoria, which is down the southern end of Australia in the colder areas up towards the Vic Alps. So basically, yeah, grew up on a big farm down there, and you know, hunting was essentially part of lifestyle growing up. But I mean, even back then, it wasn't really. I mean, the term hunting was, I mean, for a lot of the older people in the crowd, then that would have been, right? But us as young guys, it was just, we were just going out shooting kangaroos and rabbits and things like that. Just what you do when you're kind of between the ages of 10 and 15, I'm sure for guys at stateside, shooting squirrels or whatever else it might have been. So it was a very similar kind of upbringing here. But I mean, the real focus around hunting wasn't so prominent for me. It was more just a bit of fun and about getting outdoors. But yeah, essentially, I've just kind of grown with it as I've gotten older. And basically, the love for hunting came back again when I was kind of in my mid-20s, probably about 10 years ago. And just really kind of found something that I was really kind of excited about as a kid. And then just kind of, that's just translated now into an adult. And so much so that I've made a business and stuff around it, basically teaching people about hunting and how to hunt and how to utilize it, meat as obviously a resource. So yeah, as a brief overview, it's just kind of snowballed from there. And yeah, now we're just me and a couple of good friends run a business now, guiding and teaching people to hunt. And yeah, been really, really fun. And you know, meeting guys like yourself and a bunch of other people in the industry is been great, and finding like-minded people who want to do it for the right reasons, especially here in Australia. As you know, the hunting's a bit, it's kind of hasn't really taken off just yet. And there's a lot of controversy around, you know, government politics and all that kind of crap, which I don't get too involved in, but
there's controversy around government and politics everywhere, man.
Absolutely.
Everyone has the same issue. They all have everyone around the world has a major issue with government.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's one of those things that's hard. Traditionally, I never really wanted to get involved in politics and things like that, because I kind of control. I mean, it sounds stupid, like I just try and control what I can right in front of me. And obviously, hunters have a big part in pushing narratives and things. And you know, I put my hand up to say I'm probably not the best at doing that. But yeah, it's just something that over the last couple of years it's enabled me to just meet really cool people through hunting. And that's probably what I've got the most out of it, I guess. It's just the people I get to meet and sharing the experiences with them.
But you have a day job, right? You're in the, aren't you in like the graphic design marketing space? Or maybe I missed it.
No, absolutely. That. Yeah, no, I actually quit my job on Friday. So it was 3 days ago. So going on to new ventures after that for 10 years. So I've been in that space for a long time. But yeah, just taking on more opportunities that allow me to kind of hunt more and do more with that kind of area of my life. So you know what it's like. You just, and it's probably the same for you, Robbie. You know, you've got a career and stuff as well, and there would have been times where it just certainly starts to split off.
100%.
And you do whatever you can to kind of facilitate the things that, you know, we call fun. So the outdoors and all that things. So I think we're all on the same page, but we all just want more time to be able to do the things we love. And so that's basically the goal here as well.
No, you're absolutely right. I was fortunate enough to have a really good job as I was building Blood Origins. And, you know, I worked my ass off to do essentially two jobs.
Yeah.
And then got to a point from a family perspective and sort of lifestyle perspective. I was like, oh man, we can make a run at this and do what I really like to do full time. And yeah, it's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. So chuffed. Are you going into another job, or are you going to sit back and figure out what you want and then go?
Yeah, but I'm going straight into another job. I've got 4 weeks left in my current role, and then working in the electrical field. So a good friend of mine, Matt Slove, he kind of hooked me up with a job, which was kind of, it's a one of those ones where you get a 3-day weekend every second week. So you know, everywhere is a kind of a decent travel here in Australia if you want to go hunt. So having 3 days every second weekend is kind of going to open up a few more opportunities for myself. So that's kind of the main driving factor for taking on the role and all that. So yeah, just like yourself, just setting myself up to be able to be outdoors more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you, back in the day, you set up this thing called Broadside Hunting. Why did you start that?
So myself and I got a business partner, Andrew Lovell. So him and I were, and I mean, any of the hunters listening here are probably going to resonate with this. So we just constantly had people hitting us up saying, hey man, like, you know, you put up a video on Instagram of you out hunting or something like that. People, you know, with the influence of yourself and, you know, Joe Rogan and everyone else who's kind of been pivotal in the global hunting scene from a social perspective. You had all these people who were following those characters, and they're basically saying, hey, I really want to get into this. Can you take me hunting? And as we all know, we only have so much time ourselves to even hunt. So we just kept getting hammered and hammered saying, hey, I've got this mate who'd love to go hunting. Would you mind taking him out as a favor? It's like, man, I barely get time to hunt myself. And those times that I do get to hunt, you know, we take it pretty seriously. And you make time around family, friends, whatever you might do in jobs. So it just got to the point where we just honestly kept getting asked and asked and thought, shit, we could probably do something here where we can help people, but set it up in a way where, you know, you can help multiple people. We get 10 to 15 people on a hunting course. But it still just came back to the same old thing. It's, you probably know, like within fishing, every old fisher never wants to give away their fishing spots or the secrets to fishing. And a lot of people trying to get into hunting found the same roadblocks when they were speaking to hunters, where people don't want to tell them how to get into it, where to start, how to get onto private access, all those kind of things. And it makes it pretty difficult for someone who's starting off. And that's what we found. Guys come into us all the time saying, hey, I just don't know where to start. I grew up in a city. I didn't have a dad, granddad, whatever, grandmother who hunted, who was in the outdoors, who was able to provide me with those experiences. So we just found a niche where we could facilitate that for other people. And the hope was doing it in, you know, a respectful way and having reverence for animals and all the stuff that is important to us hunters. But yeah, essentially just lifting the veil off hunting and making it really open for everyone and making it not so much of a touchy subject, something where, you know, and I guess that's where bringing, you know, think full circle back into like food and things like that. And, you know, as much as we love that, it's almost a marketing tactic because it's a really easy way for people to align with hunting when you align it with food and things like that, because that's something that we all need. So, you know, we started off with just the basic foundations of hunting on how to get people started. And that's kind of evolved more now that we've got chefs like Nicholas Pierce and stuff on board. It's just kind of taken full circle into just everything from basically starting to hunt to the end product of making a meal. So it's, yeah, that's kind of how we started. Just people just continually getting us up to go out. So we were able to provide a service.
Eamon, what, from your experience, what do you think the biggest barrier of entry is for Australians wanting to become hunters?
It's knowledge and access, I think. Yeah, it just depends where you are. Like, we run our business in New South Wales, and there is a good amount of public land hunting in New South Wales, but there's licenses and accreditation. You need to be able to do that. Victoria is a bit more lenient. Where I'm in Queensland, there's no public land hunting at all. So I would say it's the knowledge base that people don't know where to get started in hunting. There's a fair few loops you have to get through to get a firearms license here. And there's, you know, obviously a lot of courses and things you need to do. And people just don't really know how to do all that. Everyone has the idea and the romanticism of going out into the forest and carrying a deer out in the back and cooking it up for your family and friends. But it's literally, you know, what you see online and stuff. It's just literally taking that step. And that's, I think that first step is always the hardest for hunters here in Australia. Especially, you know, our main populous areas are in the cities, in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, here on the East Coast. Anyone who is in a rural area, most of them had maybe at some point had some introduction into hunting or foraging or whatever it might be. Whereas for my business in particular, our core kind of clientele are people from cities and things like that who are basically thinking, shit, we had no idea how to get started. We live in an apartment in and around 6 million people. We don't know where to start. So that was kind of the main barrier, I guess, getting people in, is just people not having the knowledge.
What have those people commonly said to you that was their reason for why they wanted to start hunting?
To take control of where their food came from. Like almost, I would say 90% of them are basically coming from that aspect of not knowing. Well, wanting to be part of the process and identifying, you know, as things like, and I'll say people, organizations, let's say, for example, like PETA, you know, or veganism, or anything like that, have actually in somewhat helped us, you know, because we see a lot of this footage of, you know, chicken farms and cattle farms of animals dying inhumanely and all that kind of stuff. And we all understand it. And at some point, we're all a part of it, which is okay. But a lot of that kind of, that narrative of, you know, the treatment of animals turned a lot of people who were already meat eaters from supermarket per se and factory farm eating people into people who want to be gather wild food. Because a lot of hunters, you know, not a lot of people support the factory farming and all that kind of stuff. Even if it is a necessity, also COVID around that area where there was a real big struggle for actually getting food out of supermarkets when there was panic buying for meat and people were stockpiling. All those things were huge contributing factors for people to want to kind of take control of where their food comes from. I would say that, yeah, predominantly that was the majority of people coming through were wanting to take control of that.
I want to sort of peel that just a little bit more. So they want to control their food. Was there a reason? Was it, again, COVID was one, like they couldn't find their food maybe, and maybe PETA was another one. Those were the real structured, like, hey, this is why I've decided I need to go source my own meat.
Yep. Well, oh, I mean, thing as simple as interesting. Cost. Like, And you know yourself, there's a lot of hidden costs with hunting. Like it all seems good when you don't pack a bullet.
Hunting meat is the most expensive meat ever.
It is.
Yet we'll give it away for free, though. That's the stigma, right? We'll give it away for free.
And you do get to a point where the meat that you've recovered has paid off the amounts of gear you've bought, even though we all love to buy more gear and just seem to ruin that deficit. But I just think literally the price, you know, there's people here that sell venison online. There's a guy down here in Byron Bay, venison diplomat, I believe his name is. He's doing a great thing. It's still very expensive. And so people were just literally looking at a time where they're like, shit, if I want to go buy a steak from the supermarket, you're not getting change out of $20. If you want to buy a decent steak, $18 to $20. And yeah, that's one meal. Literally just looking back at the, honestly, just the nutrients and the protein out of it, you're just going to get almost more from venison and essentially cost you nothing if you've got the right access and things like that. So that was definitely a big part of it. And also just the health and fitness narrative, you know, getting wild meat means expersing energy. And then you're obviously taking back that good energy. So, you know, it was still part of the whole health and fitness thing. And like I said, like people like Rogan and a few of those people who are really prominent in that space, a lot of people listen to them, and it's great advice. So that also has been a big contributing factor to people.
Yeah.
Obviously want to take control of their food, but want to do it in a way that keeps them healthy and just eating, honestly, just less garbage.
What do you say to your people who come on the course when they say, well, how do we get access to places?
Yeah, so it is really difficult here in Australia to get access to private property. And so, you know, part of our business is we obviously offer, you know, guided hunting. So if people don't have access, you know, you can pay to come and get access to hunt there and things like that. And that's probably one of the bigger questions we get when people have, honestly, once they've completed doing a hunting course, they're like, okay, where to next? So how do we go hunting? And, you know, coming and doing a guided hunt through us is, you know, that's not feasible for people to do every second weekend. So you really just need to network. And, you know, things, joining hunting clubs, joining gun clubs, things like that are really good ways. There's, you know, Facebook forums and stuff for public land hunters. There's a lot of good groups here that make it really available for people to do it. You just really got to take a chance and try and put yourself out there and meet people. But, you know, like I said, there is still a bit of a veil over hunting, and it's just like fishing. You know, people don't want to give away all their access because, you know, you work really hard getting it. You know, you might befriend a farmer or something like that, and he's giving you some access. And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got a friend who wants to come. He comes, you know, you go, you have a few beers. He leaves beer cans on the property. All of a sudden, the farmer's gone, hey, what are you guys doing? You're leaving a mess on our property. You lose that. So it's a touchy subject for people, you know, willing to allow other people to come and join on their access. But in saying that, there is really good groups out there where people have access to do it. And especially here in New South Wales, you know, there's ways to do it publicly, and there's public land hunting where you can still hunt really great deer if you want to find them. So yeah, it is difficult. It is difficult. I will say that. But at the same time, you know, there is a way to do it. If you're willing to travel, then there's endless options.
And it sounds like, though, you just mentioned one of them. It sounds like you probably are giving them some sort of education to say, listen, you know, one of the biggest things when you're approaching a landowner, and if you get access, is respect the guy's property, right? Don't leave beer cans around. Open and close gates constantly. Even offer to do some work. Like, hey, you want a haunch of venison? I'll leave you a haunch of venison, no problems.
Yeah, I'm always happy to leave all the all the livers and the shanks of the farmers. If they want them, they can take them all.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations, and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Yeah, it's the same thing here, man.
But no, absolutely. And once you make that one good connection, often it just opens up a number of more. If you're great to a farmer, you know, you help out around the place. If you see a fence down and you quickly go and fix, you know, just join a couple of bits of wire together and push your cow back through the fence or whatever, like that stuff, you know, you do it anyway because you want to help. But honestly, that helps immensely for building trust and respect with especially a private landowner who, at the end of the day, a lot of them, you know, unless they want to get rid of the deer, they don't really gain anything. Someone else there, you know, shooting up their place or whatever it is. So, you know, it's really important to nurture those relationships.
Eamon, are you seeing almost like an American model starting with private landowners that say, sure, you can come hunt my property. It'll cost you X amount a day or X amount a deer or X amount a pig or X amount a goat?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. I guess since we've started our business, you know, we're the same. We work on a private property of about 9 to 10,000 acres, and we don't own the property, so we are a property owner. So every time I run a course, we've got to pay him. He gets his money. So as soon as he starts telling his neighbors, oh, we've got guys hunting here, we're doing it great, and I'm making quite a good income from this as well, word goes around, and then farmers go, shit, I always see 100 deer in the back paddock. What's that worth to me? Are they $100 a deer? Is it $500? What could this be for me? And these things are, you know, invasive species here. So I've definitely noticed a lot of people, I get every now and then just through socials, I'll get a farmer reach out and say, hey man, I've got 100 acres and I've got a couple of deer here. Like, could you run a hunting course out here and pay us? I said, oh, unfortunately, you know, 100 acres with a few deer is not really what we're looking for, but it's just the fact that people know there's you know, each of those animals comes with a price tag essentially where they can make money and, you know, someone would be willing to pay to shoot it. So I have noticed that definitely in the last five years, a lot of farmers, you know, especially when we had droughts and things like that, and, you know, the cattle are competing for feed with deer and kangaroos and things like that. And firstly, if they don't want them there and they can know they can make a bit of cash from them, then, you know, everyone's really, really keen to follow that up.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Eamon, who else is doing what you're doing in the space in Australia? There must be a demand for people to teach people how to hunt, I would think.
Yeah, so there's a few. I mean, there's a local government that does like a butchering course and things like that down in New South Wales. I know they run those type of things. From what I've heard, it's not really hands-on. So the people that I know have done it did get something out of it, but probably not as much as literally being in the field and taking part of their process. But, you know, there's a couple of outfits that do, you know, guiding and a lot around, you know, archery education and actually training and things like that. There's not anyone that I'm aware that's probably looking at it from all aspects like we do. I got two friends in the UK, you know, Matt Mostyn's another guy, Arthur, who have...
Yeah, they're doing the Wild Order.
The Wild Order, who did that.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, that's right. So they reached out to us ages ago saying, hey, we're thinking about doing something similar to you guys here in Australia. What are your thoughts? And, you know, as always, the rest of us hunters say, absolutely do it. Absolutely. The more people doing this, and I've had a few people reach out wanting to do the same thing here in Australia. I guess, you know, and I guess they're expecting, you know, when they're looking at a business model like we've kind of started, they're expecting maybe for myself to come back with a bit of haste and say, oh, no, you know, where do I like? Absolutely not. Like, I am just pushing for absolutely everyone to do anything in hunting. And I don't, it's not competition or anything like that. It's just, all it's doing is just going to build the rest of the stuff. So, oh yeah, I don't know anyone else that does it like what we do. But God, I hope there's more. Oh, sorry. There's my cousin, Gordon Wallace, he's got a company called Northeast Experience. And he essentially does something a bit similar, but really good community things for hunting here in Australia. This coming weekend, he's got a meet and greet where he gets people from all around Australia. He gets a lot of people within hunting industries here, chefs, bow hunting coaches.
Where's he based?
He's in Northeast Victoria, so just outside Albury-Wodonga.
Okay.
But yeah, so he's got a big meet and greet this weekend. And there's people like himself who are just really doing great things in hunting and just trying to get as many people as possible. And I think the number one rule is here is just, everyone's welcome. We've found that time after time, like I've said earlier, is people are hesitant to give away information on hunting, but there's so many people here in the industry who are really pumping just to get as many people involved as possible, which, yeah, it all helps.
Yeah, I certainly, Nick Morton and that crew, they're running some bow hunting stuff. Which is great. And look, the freaking mountains that you boys, I call them mountains. You probably call them hills. But man, they kill me. I was definitely not as fit as you boys running around those mountains. Let me ask this question. Eamon,
What are you seeing from a diversity perspective coming through? Are you seeing lots of interest from a woman's perspective? What about ethnicities, that kind of stuff?
Huge, especially, yeah, multicultural as people we get through. And I think that all comes back to, depending on the culture, a lot of different cultures are based around hunting around the world. You know, a lot of areas in Europe and things like that. We get a lot of Middle Eastern people come who, especially we got thousands of goats, as you know, here in Australia. So, you know, goat meat is just taking off hugely. But yeah, firstly, we get a lot of females come through, which is phenomenal. We absolutely love that. And I would say most courses we do, it's kind of like, you know, every second course we'll get a female. But as far as just different cultural backgrounds, every single course we've got someone from a different cultural background. And people, I believe, they're all coming for they've all got their own reasons. Especially these other ones where, I mean, Australia is not so much, but I know a lot of like Eastern European countries where you look back at their grandparents, like literally all they did to food was hunt. And so people have these connections that aren't so far back as ours. You know, it's only a single generation where hunting was literally the only way they got food. And then, you know, they've obviously moved, either born here or they've moved from the country back into the city, being completely disconnected from that heritage of their own family, and thought, hey, even though I'm far away from where I grew up, I want to continue what, you know, the rest of my family did for the past 100 years or whatever it might be. And I want to continue that here in Australia. So we, yeah, 100%, we get a lot of different cultural backgrounds coming to learn to hunt.
That's awesome. That's awesome to hear.
Yeah.
I think Australia is a very young country when it comes to hunting. I think
for sure.
The rural landscape has obviously a certain demeanor about it, all tied to, you know, Crocodile Dundee and yobbos and, you know, singlet wearing, ute driving, spotlight shooting, anything that moves kind of guys, right? But I think things, you know, the people that are coming out of Australia in terms of who's representing hunting and, you know, the courses that people like you guys are putting on that are giving opportunities to city people that are interested in, I'll ask this question sort of as a penultimate question here. I would envision and I would think that a lot of these guys and girls know exactly why they're coming to hunt.
Well, the,
they've got it dialed in.
Everyone that we get is, it's almost like they've just done years of research and watching, whether YouTube tutorials, podcasts, anything. Once we get them there, I feel like they already believe that they're a hunter in their mind, which is great. They've already made that switch where they're like, no, this is how I'm going to get my food from now. And when we get them in and they just, honestly, they're just foaming at the mouth, ready to get out there, like, it's one of the greatest feelings. And then the thing that I mean, we get this all the time, it's not off topic so much, but what I always see that that kind of resonates with me is when we take them out and they either get their first kill or they're alongside one of our guides who's just killed an animal, and they get to firstly put their hands on it and see, you know, once the eyes glazed over and they know there's no life. And that's, you almost see a switch flick in their head where they're like, okay, this is no longer an animal. This is now meat. This is food. And the ability for them to, you know, now get a knife in their hand and start butchering a deer. And one of the first things we always hear is, oh, I thought there was going to be more blood. I thought this was going to be a really gruesome, you know, hacking blood everywhere and things like that. But, you know, and that's part of obviously teaching butchering the correct way and things like that. But at the end of, I say, a weekend, you've seen them come like super eager and then finally got in the process of literally walking, spotting, stalking, whatever you might do, butchering, carrying out, and just they can see that whole process. And then all of a sudden they've cooked up that food and they've eaten it for dinner or one of the chefs cooked it, and just watching them figure it out in their own head, that whole circle of life, essentially, of what they've been part of. And it's almost like they just change their personality completely. So I noticed that a lot, where they leave the weekend just really chuffed and knowing that, you know, even though they've had to take a loss or whatever, that they've done it for the right reasons and they're proud of themselves for doing it.
Do they?
We always support that.
Obviously, having someone like Nick Pierce in camp as a chef, you know, is a huge feather in the cap, and also would probably change stigmas around the idea that venison is gamey and, you know, it's not really tasty. You've got guys that know how to cook it right, and they can teach them right then and there and show them and let them taste it and say, look, it tastes better than some of the filet mignon that you buy.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, there's, you've got to be mindful of how you approach the cooking side of things for people who are new into hunting. You know, there's obviously certain recipes that, you know, that essentially mask any game flavors, and then there's other ones that accentuate it, and there's other cooking processes and certain cuts of meat, you know, if we're talking livers and things like that, that are tended towards, you know, the taste of mercury or the high blood taste and things. So it's just, you know, you've got to be wary about how you introduce people to it. Like, I'm not going to cut a goat out of a liver and they quickly fry it up for someone who's never had game meat before and say, hey, have a go of this, taste how good this is, because that's an, you know, they may love it, but it's an acquired taste. So, you know, you've got to be mindful about how you introduce people to do it, because, you know, you don't want to overwhelm them with firstly that hunting is something that's impossible for you to reach. Hunting and cooking the food is, you know, it's a lot of work, and the result maybe didn't taste as good as you originally thought. So, you know, having someone like Nick who understands the complexities around, you know, people and what people like, so that's just been like a huge benefit to us. And if you teach them something simple and they can go home and, you know, everyone who leaves one of our courses takes, you know, 10 kilos of venison or goat or whatever we might get. And, you know, if we can show them a few simple techniques, so when they get home, if they've got, you know, young kids who might be fussy, but, you know, are happy to eat, you know, chicken schnitzel, then you can make them a venison schnitzel and they're not going to really notice it.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Eamon, if anybody's listening to this in Australia, how can they get a hold of you? How can they learn more about broadside hunting?
Yeah, honestly, probably through social media, through Instagram's probably the best bet. That was basically our basis business model, as you know, these days. I mean, we've got a website, broadsidehunting.com.au, where you can make things. But yeah, if anyone's got any questions, just go through the Instagram, just reach out, send us a message or an email. You know, we've got a bunch of the guides that work for us who run the Instagram as well. So everyone's just, you know, there's just years and years of knowledge of hunters here, and everyone's just always so generous with it. So I always encourage anyone who's starting out just to reach out. If you don't know where to start, if you just want any info, you know, without having to commit to a course and pay that money, then there's other options where you can put them in the right direction just to get started.
How long are the courses?
We run them over a weekend, so they start on a Friday night and finish on Sunday. We run about one a month between March and October at the moment. Obviously, we've got the rut and the raw coming up at the end of March and April, so we're kind of booked out for that area for people just to do guided hunting. But then we'll kick off the courses again and focus more on the educational side of things.
And both gun and bow is what you take?
Absolutely, yep. Yep, both gun and bow.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
And if someone doesn't have a gun or a bow,
yep,
can they borrow, like, okay, the bow is a little difficult. But can they borrow someone's gun? Is that legal in Australia? I don't know the like ramifications of this whole like thing.
Yeah. So long as, yeah, they definitely need a firearms license to be able to shoot a firearm here. They can, you know, we've got guns of our own that we lend out to people who have a gun license but don't own a firearm just yet. You know, we teach archery and things like that, but as you know, like, it's not something you can just hand someone a bow on a Friday afternoon and get them to chase a red stag on Saturday morning. So that's why we provide two courses. We've got a beginner's course and we've got an advanced. So the beginner's course is essentially just giving people the foundations to start hunting. So you literally do every single part of the hunting process except shoot a gun or fire a bow. So you'd be heading out with one of our guides. You'd be learning to spot stalk, read wind, thermal temperatures, all that kind of stuff that, you know, hunters take a second nature, but someone coming into the realm of hunting just has literally no idea about all these things. So, you know, the beginner's course is great for anyone who's thinking about getting into hunting or who might already be a hunter but just want to touch up on butchering skills and then the rest of the educational things around that. And then we've got an advanced course, which is essentially a guided hunt, but it's also for people who who are still on their journey and want to learn basically that aspect of physically hunting and all the little bits and integral pieces that kind of go along. So we kind of have a two-part courses to kind of suit, a broad range of hunters for sure.
Well, that's epic, man. Epic, epic, epic. If you're interested in going hunting, interested in learning about hunting, reach out to Eamon, Broadside Hunting on Instagram, broadsidehunting.com.au on the web.
That's us.
Eamon, you're a legend.
Beautiful.
Thank you, my man.
Oi, mate. Appreciate your time.
Well, that's it for today. Appreciate you listening, as always. Leave a review, share it with your friends, and most importantly, do what's right to convey the truth around hunting.